When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey everybody, welcome to our podcast. I'm Greg.
And I'm Wendy.
And I'm Ben.
And this is House Podcastica, the Wheel of Time edition.
This week, I'm super excited. We're covering The Wheel of Time, Season 1, Episode 1, Leave Taking.
I was just going to say it's going to be interesting because you have very dulcet tones for this episode, Greg. That's going to change as we go through, though. I know it.
I am trying to maintain my level of cool because I am super excited to finally talk about this. Why don't we start with the Episode 1. Basics of it were... Hey, we meet the characters, meet, you know, the major players, and then stuff literally turns on fire and everybody has to leave. So name of the episode, Leave Taking. What were y'all's general thoughts on it?
Wendy, you go. You
start. I really liked it. When I watched it the second time, I thought, yeah, the beginning was a little bit slow. But on the first watch, I really didn't notice it. I was just really trying to absorb everything that they were showing us. I thought until the attack, I thought it was really just incredibly beautiful and sweet. And the characters everything seemed really good. And then the attack just blows you away.
Oh, you mean like every, like, oh, this is a good life. Things are going good. It's like a celebration.
That's
it. Definitely. I'm glad to hear you say that because I was obviously expecting it. But to see, like, for you to be like, oh my gosh, what just happened? And that excites me because this is one of the reasons that I'm so excited to be doing this with you is that you don't have any idea what's coming, and when a surprise like that occurs, you know, this thing just blossoms from this guy's chest, and he's like, whoa, what is this?
Yeah.
I mean, it ended up being quite a bit more graphic than I was anticipating.
Hmm. Yeah, it was, I think they went there.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's part of the thing that I'm looking forward to as well is, you know, as I mentioned in the intro episode, we're kind of taking this from like a three-tiered approach, and that, Greg, you have very vivid memories of reading these books. Wendy has never read these books, and I have only like a vivid recollection of what it is. So my first viewing was kind of interesting in that I was trying to remember certain things as I was watching to also enjoy the series. Mm-hmm. So there were definitely things that I remembered, and there were quite a few things that I didn't remember at all. But that could also be because they are taking a different approach to the show in truncating the story and only putting, you know, the most important parts of the story on screen.
Yeah, the major set pieces and whatnot. Yeah. That's fair. Like, I'm Wendy, I'm glad you enjoyed it. Ben, how about you?
I really enjoyed it, and I'll be totally honest with you. It's been years since I've read these books, and again, I've only read maybe like the first five or six of them. By the end of the first episode, before I even jumped into episode two, I was pricing the Kindle books on Amazon.
I'm not going to say that they are all amazing, but I would say that if you are enjoying the series and you want to, you know, just venture into the world, it is well worth the cost.
Well, I mean, and not to plug obviously we do want to plug Amazon because they're the one that created the series, but you know, they're $10.99 Kindle editions on Amazon right now. So probably because the first three books are actually number one bestsellers on Amazon right now.
Oh, hell yeah.
For obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. And I thought about it. I was like, you know what? If I like took like the next year to knock out all 14 of these books, $10.99 a month is very easily doable.
Sure.
And I can kind of get through these series and maybe remind myself of a lot of what I forgot, plus continue on past the point I had gotten to finish the story before we even get a season two, or maybe shortly after we get a season two.
My understanding is, and this, I have this part of it in news, but season two is filming right now, and they're anticipating mid to late 2022 for release. Okay. They don't have a date yet, but so with regard to me, for general thoughts, like, I thought that the visuals were amazing. Looking at it through, it's basically the same story, and a couple of scenes are literally ripped off of the page and planted into, and it's just it kind of gave me chills a couple of times where they took a couple things out that I thought were kind of important, but I think in the long run, it's almost like that. Hey, you know, Wendy, you said on second watch the first you know half hour or so was actually kind of slow, but on first watch it was like, oh, these, I'm just trying to absorb everything. I would say this is just my own. I would give this like a 3.5 out of 5 for my personal thing. Just because, and it's the beginning, and I'm so looking forward to the stories that are coming.
Yeah, there has to be a bit of a setup, especially with such a complicated world that they're packing into this tight show.
I mean, the visuals were 5, like 100%.
Absolutely.
The visuals were amazing. I really liked them. So move it into the top three. When do you want to get started?
Sure. So my number three is Girl Power. This world has a violent history. We find out in the voiceover that men were in charge and they brought the world to the brink of self-destruction, specifically the dragon. Out of the ashes of those wars, the Aes Sedai, made up of women with special powers, rose in society. So it seems that in many parts of this world, women hold the dominant role in society. I think this is super cool. It's really novel. You don't see a lot of shows that kind of take that on. And I thought it was done really authentically. It wasn't making women men. Women are still women. They're just kind of holding that alpha gender role. So I thought that was really cool. I thought they did it really thoughtfully. And I saw many scenes interspersed in the first episode. Like, one of the very first scenes, you see two men running from a group of women on horseback. It's apparent that the women are in charge. They're holding all of the power there. The head woman of this group tells the man that the power that he somehow has been able to touch is meant only for women, and that when men touch it, it turns to shit.
Ouch.
That was really neat. Yeah. And please correct any of my pronunciations. At Egwene's test in the river, or her ceremony, there's only women present. The men know that it happened, but it seems that it's just not, they're just not part of it at all. I think later on, Egwene tells Rand that she can't talk about what happened at the ceremony. She can't tell him. Another part, in the tavern scene, you can see that there's groups of women alone, and it seems apparent that the men are just not welcome in those certain groups, and the women are sharing something that's just for them. And it was subtly done, but really, I felt it seemed real. So I really liked the way they did all of that. And also, during the Trolloc attack, a group of townswomen surround and kill a Trolloc. And I mean, like, badass. They were going for it. They all had tools. And then Perrin's wife, Layla, she appears to be the town's blacksmith, a job usually portrayed as a male-dominated field. And she also, when she's fighting the Trolloc, she's really holding her own with all of that.
Yeah, I mean, Layla was actually... She and Perrin are one of my points. You're absolutely right. It's funny, because I was watching Stranger Things. I'm finally getting through season two. And there's a scene where one of the kids goes to Mike's house and knocks on the door, and the dad answers, and like, hey, is Mike here? And he just leans into his into it to yell to his wife, hey, are our kids home? And the wife just basically, she's on the phone, and she's like, no, they're whatever. And he's like, you happy? And he's like, well, what about you know, the sister? And he's like, I don't. And then so the mom just snaps again. The dad's just like, I don't know. What do you want me to do? Like, that's how it feels. It feels yeah. like, I mean, like, hey, the women hold the power, wear the pants, as it were. Even if, you know, the kind of the figureheads seem to be sometimes men. So, I'm not correcting, just adding a little bit to what you were talking about. So that's the women's circle, was the welcoming, basically it's like a coming of age, event, for Egwene. And the pronunciations, believe me, the back of each book comes with a glossary and has pronunciations in it. So don't worry about butchering those, because they are rough. It is absolutely a female run world, and Robert Jordan was actually one of the more progressive authors back in the 90s. This is not something that was, like, you look at Tolkien, and I get that Tolkien was, you know, decades before, but all of the dwarves are male. All of the main yep. characters are male, with the exception of like Eowyn and Galadriel yep. and whatnot. But most of them were men.
Yep.
Well, you even look at the Trollocs. Like, even the Trollocs are all male.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like a role reversal, where this time it's actually the evil side is all male, rather than, like you mentioned, Lord of the Rings, all the dwarves being male, all the elves mm-hmm. being male, or the predominantly male. This time it's the opposite side, where it's the evil side, where the Trollocs are all male. There's no female Trollocs, at least not that we've seen.
Right. Not that we've have been notable.
Yeah.
But, oh, hey, there's exactly. not. No, that one has udders. So, you know, it's obviously a female. That's an awesome number three, Wendy. Girl power. It was, in fact, very, very strong in this episode.
It was a note that I had made mention of too in my notes. It wasn't in my top three, not because I'm against girl power, so nobody needs to call me out on that. It was one of my notes as well.
What you got, Ben?
excuse me. So I wanna start out with one of, actually, the only negative I have of the episode.
Okay.
I very highly enjoyed the episode. It's a 7 out of 10 for me, if not an 8 out of 10. So I really did enjoy it. But that opening scene to me felt very out of place, with the Red Sisters chasing the two men. It seemed like, with the exception of just showing that women are in power, which we kind of got that later anyway, when we got to the village, that scene could have been taken out, and it really had no effect on the story.
Okay.
So, and I really didn't notice that until my second viewing of the episode. Like, I felt, it really made me question, like, okay, what was the purpose of that scene?
I only assumed that they would come back to something with it, because it doesn't fit with everything else. It really didn't.
And that was my my issue with the scene. Yeah. And yes, like, I'm fully confident those characters are going to come back later on in the scene. But rather than give us an introduction of them at the very beginning of the episode and be like, okay, who were these women? And then never touch on them again.
Yeah.
I would have much rather it been later on when those characters are going to become more predominant to the story and leave us wondering then, rather than give us this tease in the beginning and then never not, touch on not it yet, for, and,
ha- yeah, no, that's, for however that's, long. That's fair. So I imagine that part of that is... I get it. We had the voiceover from Moraine early mm-hmm. on, but I imagine that at least a little bit of it was to show that men are affected by touching the source. The madness already has him. So you're showing that it's not just like it's not just that they you know to show the women in power, but I think that the split of oh you're not talking to anybody, there's nobody else there. I think that was to show you what could happen to one of these five characters if it happens, if the Dragon Reborn happens to be a male, that could happen to them in the next couple of episodes while they're still mm-hmm. trying to figure stuff out. I agree with you. It because I know what's going on, I kind of just took the whole scene for granted, but bringing it up that way, that's actually a really good point. I hadn't thought about it that way.
And I think it also kind of affects the episode negatively in the end, too, because you have to figure these episodes are put to a particular running time, and you had a good 2 to 3 minutes using this scene that I think could have been in place somewhere else. And, you know, when we get to the end of the episode, when, you know, Moraine is taking the characters, it's pretty much like, okay, like, the Trollocs are going to come for you, so we have to leave now. There's no kind of like bargaining with them because, you know, you had Perrin who just lost his wife. You have Rand who's, you know, his father has been poisoned and is now recovering. And it's like, would they have really gone that easily? I think you could have taken that 2 or 3 minutes that was served for that beginning scene and used it at the end to kind of expand on that leaving scene a little bit more.
Okay, that's fair. I think again, this is just coming from my viewpoint. Would they have mm-hmm. you know those? Would they have left? I think the whole point was, hey, like those armies that you see like in the distance, they're coming for you. They're not coming for your town. They're coming for you. So I do think that.
What? Yeah, I mean, it's not that would they have left? It's would they have left that easily? Is more. I think. In a real life situation like that, where you have just gotten, I think it might have taken a little bit more convincing.
Yeah, I mean, you're probably not wrong.
You know, I don't think it's not that whether would they or would they have not have left. It's would they have left that quickly?
Right. Yeah. You literally just had your complete idyllic mm-hmm. Life completely destroyed, and a number of your friends that you've grown up with killed. And their families or whatever, you know, one guy just accidentally killed his wife. Mm-hmm. So like, and so that's going to lead into my number three, which is a very specific point, Perrin and Layla. And specifically the fact that Perrin killed his wife. I know that skips over like a whole bunch of like basically like the first, you know, 3/4 of the episode, but that one, that is, I'm not getting it too deep into the books, but that is a difference in the book. Perrin was not married. I think this just gave an immediacy to his confidence and his guilt. And I like, that's the death of the group from the Two Rivers. That really made me go, shoot. It made me wonder about his character in the future.
It was very graphic too.
Yeah. I mean, like the actress reminded me of
Daisy Ridley from Star Wars.
Yeah. From Star Wars. Yeah. Yeah. She reminded me of Rey. Or at least the inner facial features, and I was just like, "Oh man, that's not her, is it?" No, it's not. And I looked it up; it's not. But, but yeah. So like the whole forge scene and the fighting in there was, and I mean for me, it's hard not to. I mean, I get it; I'm a guy, but like, it's hard not to just pick visual battle portions for all 3 points. But yeah. the emotional impact was really well done.
Yeah.
The emotional impact of Perrin and Layla is really what kind of drove that one to the top for me.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, it's going to be interesting on his character because, you know, now he's being forced to leave this village, and he really hasn't told, well, he didn't tell anybody by the end of the episode what had happened. He kind of just lets everybody believe that she was lost to the battle. Was she pregnant?
She was pregnant, right?
You know, On the second watch, I don't think she was. On the first watch, I thought she was holding her stomach.
He was holding her stomach.
On the second watch, I think she was just grabbing his hand, and I don't think so.
Okay, I thought he was reaching for her belly.
I definitely thought that the first watch. And I never picked up on it. Yeah, and I paid attention the second one, and the second one I convinced myself that no. But okay. I totally get how you thought that, because both of us thought that.
And that made me even more emotionally invested in the death. And given that she wasn't there in the book, I didn't realize. I mean, I maybe in the back of my mind, but I wasn't looking for it. I wasn't waiting for it. So it was pretty significant for that to happen.
Yeah.
Oh, it was completely unexpected for me as well. Like, I remember that being like a true, like, oh shit moment watching that episode.
Yep.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt the pregnant stuff was, I was like, oh my God. But
it seemed like that just came to you. Like, wait a minute, was she pregnant?
Well, I know. Yeah. So I definitely had thought about it before, but I was just like, but then I realized that I didn't mention it, which I was like, oh my God, was she pregnant? But anyway.
Yeah. In neither one of my watches did it ever cross my mind that she was pregnant.
Gotcha. Okay.
So I guess it's just the way you view it.
Yep. All right. That's my number three. What you got, Wendy?
All right. My number two is, the use of color and visual effects. I thought every scene was just visually stunning, more so than most other shows that I've seen. The one show that came to my mind that I've seen recently that sort of reminded me of it was Lisey's Story. Did either of you see that?
Yeah.
Never saw it.
Yeah, I watched it.
And just their use of color, and it kind of reminded me of that. Every pixel is just soaked with color. Even like the colors of the stones in the houses, the color of the town, everything seemed beautiful. Even the simple things that obviously they wanted it to look like a simple town, but yet everything was beautiful. The vistas of the mountains and the towns, you can really tell how much care was put into every single detail and every single scene. The dark scenes are still full of rich blues and purples. The colors that paint Egwene in the river during her ceremony, painting her entire body and gown, just incredibly beautiful. The use of fire was all over this episode. Fire, light, flickering candlelight. You can see in the vista that the light is just touching on the tips of the mountains, the fading sunlight at the end of the day, the lanterns in the festival,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
all beautifully glowing, yeah, reflecting off the dark water. And then even in the attack scene, the use of fire during that whole attack scene, everything was really an assault on your senses. And the lightning when Moraine is channeling her powers, even during that bloody and dark attack, it makes everything so much more beautiful and visually stunning. And the costumes are all incredibly colorful and beautiful. You know, even like Rand's sweater, you could just see it looked like you wanted to reach out and touch it.
That wool was pretty blatantly just like out there. I'm just like, whoa. Yeah. Okay, so they're talking about wool. Okay, got it.
Yeah. I thought that was really beautiful to watch. And I can't think of another show that has done it so well.
I just want to say, Wendy, the way you alliterate your notes for this episode make me feel like such a schlub.
No, absolutely.
Because you're being so like descriptive, like with the way the color touches the mountains and everything, and I'm sitting here thinking, oh, my next note is I like this part. Like it's... it's well done. Like you're really drawing me in with what you have to say about the episode.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's fun because when you first watch the movie, it feels like a movie, but when you first watch it, even as a person who kind of knows what to expect, like I'm like looking at small portions, not necessarily entire, like I'm looking at the trees, not the forest. But they are doing something with the forest, which I haven't seen outside of movie quality productions. And it's mm-hmm. absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, the show is visually stunning. It really is. And you can tell where they put the money behind the production budget for this in making it look the way it is. But, you know, when you made the comparison accidentally and calling it a movie rather than a television series, it does really feel like that in some parts. I mean, this isn't one of my top three, but there were definitely parts of this episode that felt similarly very kind of being able to be compared to Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
One scene in particular is the introduction of Patton Fain. The way he comes into town with the cart and everything. It's like Gandalf riding into the Shire.
I didn't think of that.
And, I mean... Patton Fain is definitely a much different character than Gandalf. But, you know, him riding into Two Rivers is very similar to the way Gandalf rode into the Shire,
mm-hmm.
you know, with the fireworks. And there are comparisons that can be made that do make it feel like it's more of a movie than a television series.
What happened to Patton at the end of the...
He kind of just backs out into the darkness.
Oh, okay.
Okay, yeah. Did you guys get the feeling that when the attack happened, he didn't look surprised or upset or anything like that? And he just kind of like, he didn't look freaked out or anything. He just like
backed around
the building that he was, or his cart or whatever. Like,
I got that feeling as well. He was a part of it. Yeah.
And I was just like, I saw that. Like I was like, what you doing, buddy?
Almost like he was a little bit of a spy.
Mm hmm.
Like, I can't say it because it's a spoiler for the book, but we'll talk about it afterwards.
Yep, absolutely. All right, so, Ben? What?
My number two is I want to talk about the badassery, if that's a word, mixed with almost the beauty and with the symmetry... and sync to Moraine and Lan battling together during the Battle of Two Rivers. That scene with the two of them together, with her, you know, being an Aes Sedai and him being a warder, like, it works so well that, like, you could tell without them ever revealing that they're connected, that they're connected. Like, he could foresee every move to protect her while she's doing... what she needs to do.
Except for that spear that just happened to,
appear
out of nowhere. Anyway, sorry. I was just like, man, that was a lucky shot.
No, but there's almost like a beauty to what she does, you know, as an Aes Sedai, and, you know, controlling the light to be a power. But Lan himself is a total badass.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, while you have villagers teaming up to take on one of the Trollocs, like, he's taken out two or three at a time. And he's just, like, I want to see more of those two in action together.
Right. I think that... I don't know, given what's going on with... Moraine and whatever, like, if she's got the same type of wound that Tam Althor or Rand's dad did, I mean, shouldn't be too hard to fix it, but I'm curious how effective she'll be in the future if like if that does continue to either stay infected or whatever the case is.
They seemed very comfortable with each other.
Oh, I mean, the bath scene, I was like,
yeah,
I was like, whoa, yeah, that was definitely some buttocks there.
It definitely, like, you know, you want to know more about their relationship, you know, and their.
I mean, it absolutely seemed like they were very intimately connected. But it didn't appear.
It's not a sexual nature.
I agree. It was intimate, but not sexual, which feels odd. Although seeing them fight together, it's almost like brother sister. I'm very interested in to see. They talk about their connection or their bond, and I want to see how they're gonna, what they're gonna do as far as representing that in the story.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I want to know more about that bond. Like, I want to know what it is that connects the two of them, what it is that, you know, puts them so well in sync together. I just want to see. I want to learn more about that in the future.
Yeah, that's. I mean, absolutely. That it for your number two?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Right. Like I said, Wendy gets very illiterate, and very literary, and I like this part.
I hear you. You didn't steal it, but it was. Basically, I'm going to the climax of the episode where Moraine straight up pulls the cinder or the mortar from between the cinder blocks, breaks them all down, and it's not like she was. Yes, you know, she did shoot some lightning and fire some fireballs and stuff. But when she needed to take down the reinforcements, she had to use things that were around her, right? Taking a brick here or a chunk of stone there or whatever. But the detail that it's like, oh, hey, I'm not ripping an entire building out. I am wearing away at the mortar around each brick or each stone, and then whipping the stones out. I just thought that the detail was like, she didn't pick up an entire building and chuck it at them. She, you know, selectively chose what it looked like was she pulled power from the fire. She pulled power from the ground, from the all everything. She was basically, it's almost like basically pulling energy from the world around you and then refocusing it in order to for a very very destructive parry to the entirety of the small regiment of Trollocs.
And she was trying very hard to keep every building intact, at least until the end.
Yeah, that last one with the giant piece of stone that it was so funny because it's just a detail. It's just a small little thing, but it just like hits the Trolloc and then like flops over, and then it like shakes the ground because this piece of stone is so huge. And I was just like, that's a really cool detail to just add in there.
And it was almost like a cartoon ending where like after the battle is over, then the buildings fall.
Right.
Because we see the inn collapse in the background after that moment.
Yeah, it was, I thought that was, again, I don't know if, so one of the differences in the book is that you can't see magic happening. You can see the result of it, but you can't see, like, there's no, like, you know, little space dust or whatever sucking out of wherever. I don't know if that's just a representation that we're supposed to be able to see, or if all the townspeople can see that as well. I'm interested to see if it's just like, oh, hey, if you see little floaty things, that means the One Power is being wielded around you, or if it's, you're just like, oh, shit, that's just magic.
I didn't think about that. I mean, it's almost very similar to, like, if that is the case and, like, the villagers can't see the magic happening, she's literally just pulling it, you know, and projecting it. But as viewers, they're doing that as a visual for us so that we know. Mm-hmm. It's very similar to how, like, anytime you watch a sitcom, there's always strings tied to, like, an air vent or a fan because that's how you know the wind is blowing.
Oh, right.
Yes.
You know, that's the visual that they give us to let us know the fan is on or the AC is on.
Yeah.
Whatever. Because who ties strings to their air vent? I mean, it's literally just a visual used in television. So that could very well be the case.
Never thought about it. I'm sure that I've seen stuff like that, but I know exactly what you're talking about because I don't, you know, I don't have little orange streamers coming down from each of my air conditioning vents, but I've absolutely seen that on TV.
Are you serious? You have streamers?
No, I'm saying I don't. I don't have. Oh, okay. I don't have streamers coming down from mine. But I was. But I mean, like, I definitely have seen those before. I guess it's to understand that the AC is on. But now,
and that's exactly.
But now, it makes way more sense to have that on TV rather than have it in somebody's house.
Yeah, because if you just pointed a camera at an AC vent, like it's like, oh, we're just looking at an AC vent. But if you have that visual, your brain automatically knows, like, okay, there's air coming.
It's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a media representation, mm-hmm. which is what that could be with Moraine too. Is that like that's literally just for us as viewers?
Yeah, I don't know, but I am super into the representation, and I like it.
Yeah,
yeah. So I am another one of those. Yeah, this part was neat. So back to the more eloquent of us, Wendy. What do you got?
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at gethumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
My number one was the badass beasties. The Trollocs, they were super cool. I think I said this before, I was lulled by the beauty of the town and the festival starting and the lanterns and everything was beautiful and all the people were good and sweet. And then the Trolloc attack started. And it was, that attack was long. They spent time on it. And it was vicious and graphic, and I thought they looked completely badass. They seem very hard to kill. And I really liked the way they all looked different with varying characteristics, and they had different weapons on them and different armor and different facial features. I thought that was really cool. In one scene, I thought I saw the Trolloc eating someone.
Yep.
Did you guys see that?
Yeah.
Yep.
Like, so, yeah, so as if they're not bad enough. And then they also have some kind of poison that appears to have some kind of immediate gangrene effect. So these guys are really badass villains. I thought it was interesting that Rand's father, was that Tam?
Yeah, Tam.
Tam Althor. Knew exactly what they were, and he seemed to be the only one that knew exactly what they were, and he seemed to have some experience with them because he pulled his sword out like right away, and I thought that scene with him fighting the Trolloc was really cool. I thought that was minute scene was amazing.
You talk about a badass. I mean, Lan was a badass. But Tam, for a countryman, a person from the country, he was the more surprising badass. You're like, oh, he's got the sword in a fancy little box, and he busts that out, and the mark, the bird on the crane or whatever it is on the side of the sword, I imagine that's going to come back and mean something, so...
And up until that point, he seemed super mild-mannered. So you're right, it was a big surprise.
Yeah, he was I mean, that the actor Michael Madsen is just, I thought he was great. I absolutely.
Could he play a more different character than Roose Bolton? I mean, he just exudes like goodness and fatherly love, and
basically, that, as you said, really the opposite of Roose Bolton. It's like we talk about you know, kind of sticking people into a pigeonhole because of previous characters, and he's just like, oh no, that's not me.
Yeah.
Like, oh, all right. Well, great.
Yep.
Anything else?
Nope, that's it.
My number one, I'm actually going to piggyback off of that, because the battle scene with the Trollocs was one of my favorite parts of this. And you did touch on a lot of it with, you know, the style. I loved the great balance of practical effects with CGI that the show uses to portray them. And even the CGI scenes that they use were kind of still very reminiscent and felt practical. So it blended very well, that there weren't scenes that you could tell like, oh, well, that was CGI and that was practical. Like, they were pretty close in similarity that it blended very well. But one of the things I did notice about the Trollocs in my second viewing is their battle style. And it's Trollocs are very, I mean, they're very, very obviously hunters. But one of the things I noticed upon second viewing is that if you ran from a Trolloc, you were dead. Like, there was no escaping a Trolloc. If you were being chased and they caught you, there was no fighting it. But if you stood against a Trolloc, you could beat them. Like, because, you know, when it comes to, like, an animalistic hunter, that's what they want. They want to chase their prey. But when you stand to it, you know, you talk about Tam and him being able to fight it with Rand. You talk about the women coming together and fighting it. If you stood against a Trolloc, you had a chance of survival. It was a better chance of survival than actually running away, which really, I mean, I totally understand why they do run from the village at the end and escape the village. But it's kind of like, okay, you realize the odds are stacked against you by leaving, because you are running from hunters.
Right.
But, you know, when you look at the number of for and against,
yeah,
it's very clear why they ran.
And they're fast. They're outrunning horses.
Yeah,
so that's crazy.
They are fast. I imagine that the comparison is, we will make a lot of these comparisons, but very reminiscent of orcs in Lord mm-hmm. of the Rings. You know, there are a ton of them. These seem more formidable than orcs, at least what, you know, that we saw in the movies. Like, these things are like 8 feet tall, 9 feet tall, probably weigh 500-600 pounds, and basically all muscle. I don't know if they're going to get in. They basically just seem like, As you said, Wendy, animals, and they may not have, you know, a lion can be very strong and smart when it comes to hunting, but when you have someone who counters that, like Ben, you were saying, then you've got someone who counters that. There, it's almost unexpected to them. They're either mm-hmm. they're expecting an easy fight, and if you fight back, it's maybe a little bit more challenging, I guess. I thought the bestiality of the, maybe the wrong word, but how how significant they were was pretty intense.
I think primal,
yeah, thank you.
Is probably a better word than bestiality. I mean, especially when you look at the fact too that they're controlled by Lord Voldemort. Which, am I the only one
that thought that when I saw
the fade? Visually, it looks like Lord Voldemort in a hood.
Yeah, it looks like Lord Voldemort, and yes, I did think that was really funny.
Yeah,
it almost took me out of it a little bit, because I was like, all right, I've seen this guy before.
That's Ralph Fiennes. I know that's who that is. No, so I mean, like, I. I granted, it's a horrible moment in the story when these Trollocs come in, but from a viewer standpoint, everything that was done with that battle, from the brutality and the graphicness, which is very on par with Game of Thrones, if you ask me, mm-hmm. is, you know, combined with the balance of the CGI and the practical effects, man, like, it, my attention stayed on that screen the entire time. I thought it was just incredibly well done.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. So, was that your number one?
That was my number
okay.
one.
Okay. Yeah. So, my number one, I'm going to go ahead and just go with our core group of characters. And I'm not going to, you know, go through them all, you know, and discuss differences and stuff like that. But I just want to. All right. So, Nynaeve, she is the wisdom. She is either a leader in or the healer in the village. So she's like the town nurse. So you hold a bit of power from that. You have Egwene, who was going to be her apprentice, or is going to be her apprentice. I mean, except that Nynaeve is now off somewhere else, probably Trolloc food. You had Rand, who lives on the mountain. Who's a farmer, I'm assuming. We had Perrin, who was a blacksmith along with Layla, or apprentice to Layla, or helper with Layla. And then you had Matt, who apparently just a prick, just like his dad. although he, you know, hooker with a heart of gold, with his sisters and caring for him, although going to a friend, stealing her bracelet, and then selling that to the peddler was maybe a bit of a scamp. So maybe not the best person. Also a gambler who doesn't necessarily have his luck. And I thought that the introduction to all of these characters, it was quick enough that you kind of had to pay attention as each person was on screen, and is this, especially when it was dark and there was firelight and whatnot, you're like, is that this person or is this that person? I actually didn't realize that it was Nynaeve that was taken off initially until Egwene was yelling at her. I was like, oh, okay. But on second watch, I was like, okay, so this is this and this is that. And yeah, Matt's kind of a shit. He lost a bunch of money to Dana, I believe her name was, or Danya, and then went and stole her bracelet. So a bit of a shit.
I am fully anticipating not learning everybody's names. I mean, even
subtitles is very helpful. Just saying.
Well, mm-hmm. not only that, but I mean, like, even in all the seasons of Game of Thrones that we had, even by the end, there were still people's names I could not remember. Because there were so many.
Yeah, no, there were.
And
there
now,
were
you're,
tons,
and now
tons,
you're throwing in
those.
Pronunciations.
Oh yeah, that's tough.
Yeah, now you're throwing in pronunciations.
Yeah. So I'm going to use the pronunciations that when I read them, I either made it up in my head because I didn't go back and look in the glossary, or after reading, you know, 7 or 8 books, and then I'm like, okay, well. And I hear somebody say it. I have a conversation with somebody, and they're like, "Oh yeah, Egwene or versus Egwene," and I'm like, "Okay, I got to go take a look at what the book says." So there are a couple of specific ones that I want to bring up in, or that I have in my notes. But yeah, so I like our little band of merry men and women. Well, maybe a little bit less merry now, but I really enjoyed the introductions, and I thought that each of them had enough background that they weren't super generic. Rand was kind of generic, but Matt had specific characteristics. Perrin, and I think the addition of his wife, the addition of Layla, really kind of added emotional complexity to Perrin's character. Mm-hmm. The fact that Rand and they've aged these guys up. They've aged this core group of characters up. They were like 16, 17 in the book. And so Rand and and Egwene smushing booties, you know, after cleaning up at the end of the night. At least I'm assuming so, because he fell asleep and she couldn't help it. I was like, oh, that's a bit of a change. In one of the interviews that we've got, that I read, there's a reasoning to that, and I can appreciate it a little bit more.
Yeah, they're all 20, right?
Yep, they're all 20-ish.
Yeah, they're all 20. Yeah.
Well, with the exception of
Nynaeve or
right. Nynaeve, who was like I think 25.
25 or 26, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so that was my number one. Nynaeve is kind of, we'll say, a shrew. She does not like Aes Sedai. Does not like them. Or at least based on her little story. All right, any notes?
I thought it was humorous that all the complicated language and names and pronunciations, but they still said prick and pig. I thought that was funny.
That was pretty good.
I have more of a question than I do have a couple notes, but I do have a couple questions kind of tagging on to your number one.
Yeah.
Greg? Of all the characters that we've met so far, are there any of them that kind of stand out as an early favorite? Because I actually do have one.
So I'll be honest, I really liked Layla. Even though she only had like two lines, maybe it was she was pretty and I'm a pig. I think that variation kind of struck at me. I personally like Perrin, although the emotional torture that he's going through is I'm a big dude, and I empathize with being a big person around a bunch of people that are smaller. That's just me.
That makes sense.
What you got? Or Wendy?
Well, how about Wendy?
I thought that Matt, I thought he was funny, and I felt sympathetic for him, which he obviously had a dysfunctional family, as so many of us do. I thought he was
funny.
We're
on the same page.
Yeah.
Yeah. Matt's one of my early favorites as well. Mainly for the fact that, like, yes, he is a little bit of a scamp. He did steal the bracelet. He did sell it to Padam Fane for tokens or whatever the currency is. But when you look at the fact that he did it to buy lanterns for his sisters to put into the water.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, like, he's doing bad things, but he's kind of got good intentions for why he's doing it.
Did he? Was that the purpose of it? Or is that what Fane gave him? Because he said one mark, and then he said, oh, no, marks, it's worth more than that. And then he said, I'll give you half a mark and three lanterns, which is the best deal you'll get. And I was like, did he actually, like, was the intent to just this, or was it to get the money in general? And maybe it was to feed his family. Maybe it was to feed his little sisters. But I can see.
Okay,
what you're
well, you
about.
Totally ruined my reasoning for why I liked Matt.
Nope, sorry about
but
that.
But I still like.
I think he's interesting, though. He's like he's got a lot of depth to
him.
And
he's the
flawed
character.
Yeah.
But
and I thought he was funny, and he was like sardonic. You know, like I liked him.
That's fair. I mean,
yeah.
No counting against opinions.
Yeah.
And Lan. I like Lan a lot. I did watch all three episodes, and, you know, we'll talk about the rest of them in further future podcasts. But I thought that his interactions with Moraine really, I think that Daniel Henney is doing awesome. So that's
anybody get Legolas vibes from Lan? Or am I the only
Who?
One? Legolas from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, okay. No, once you said Legolas, I got it.
It's been a long time since I've watched Lord of the Rings.
I can only see Orlando Bloom and like the memes of him, so I can't really. No, I mean I don't, but I guess the headband, maybe that would give it a little bit.
Well, and the cloak and the sword and you know the sword play.
Did Legolas fight with a sword? I thought he was just bows. Like even well, from, he was more even bow. From he 2 feet away, you got to hit him with a bow.
Yeah. All right, that's a good point. That's a good point. Go ahead.
Any other notes?
My last note was that Moraine's power seems to be limited. Like she didn't initiate the power until the attack was well underway, and. Both Lan and her seem to know that she wouldn't be able to handle the multiples that were coming, and her power seemed to be depleted, and I was just wondering how she would get it back and how that works, and I thought it was interesting, you know, because it's not like a Marvel movie where they just have unlimited power, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so I like that part of it, but I also can't wait to see what happens with that.
Yeah, you're not Cap who can do this right. All day.
Right.
I have two final notes. The first is just from an early prediction of the series, I feel like production style wise and production quality wise, I feel like the show is actually very on par with Game of Thrones. I don't know if anybody else thinks that.
Yeah.
I think this could give... I know that's one of the ideas that Jeff Bezos, when he approved the production of this, he wanted this to be a show that was a contender with Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. I think if given the time, I think it really could be.
I actually think it's better than early Game of Thrones. Now, later season Game of Thrones, yeah. I mean, that was some high production. But... from early Game of Thrones, I think the production value of this is better.
I think that the acting is where original or Game of Thrones kind of. I think you're right. The production value is higher now with Wheel of Time, but I think that the acting is what they leaned on in early seasons. And boobs.
that's true.
So. And lots of sex, mm-hmm. which
yeah.
Game of Thrones highlighted a lot.
Absolutely. Your last one, Ben?
This is actually more a question for Wendy, because Greg, I don't know if this would affect you at all. There's a scene very early on in this episode that's very, very quick, and it kind of... touches on questions about the novels that even I still question to this day. And that is when this takes place. I don't know if anybody else caught the scene or not, but there is a scene where there are buildings, as in skyscrapers.
No.
That are overgrown.
I didn't see that.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the first scene where the two men?
It's in the beginning of the episode, I believe, before we even get to Two Towers. Or Two Towers. Wrong movies franchise. Two Rivers.
Huh.
But there is a scene that is a... it's a up high, looking over the land scene, and there are skyscrapers that are over.
Well, I have to go watch it again now.
So, okay, so there... it was actually... I think I know exactly what you're talking about. I think it was the part right when you were... I think it was right when Moraine said there were, you know, four Teverin born in the Two Rivers, and then they go to the Two Rivers, and then you see a bunch of basically what look like towers, and they're all overgrown, and they almost look like ancient giant relics. It seems like this is a post-apocalyptic time frame from whatever world this is.
Is it Pittsburgh? No, I'm just kidding.
is that a Last of Us reference?
I haven't seen Last of Us. Yeah.
Boston is the one that was super overgrown in the game, but yeah, that's my input. Like there was like they talk cool. about they talk about the dragon and the breaking of the world and all that. So I think something in the news that like it gives a kind of an idea of that, but
okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, because I think there are even like elements of the book series, and this isn't really a spoiler because, unless they bring it into the series, which I don't think they will. And that was a question for a while is when this takes place, because there are in the book series there are a number of references that people have kind of translated into, well, this is kind of actually referencing Scott Glenn going to the moon, and this is another reference of this of things that happened in our present day, but this is well in the future. Of our own time.
Oof, that is hardcore.
Yeah.
So
I'll have to dig them up for the next episode. But there were a couple I found online.
Reading all of the books, I never considered this to be a future version of Earth, and I honestly I didn't really get into like the conspiracy theories of the stories online, but. That's an interesting idea.
Yeah, I'll have to see if I can find some of the some of those references that I found.
So I only have one note, and that is how deeply everybody thinks in this show about the Wheel of Time, and I get it. It was a little bit of exposition. It's a little bit of a dig, but like when they're lighting the candle, and Rand is like. Oh, how long does it take for a soul to find it to be rebirthed into the Wheel of Time or by the Wheel of Time? And I'm like, all right, we're kind of hitting ourselves over the head with with this concept. Oh, this guy, this kid who grew up in the backwoods of a tiny village, he lives in the frickin' mountains. Now maybe his dad is experienced and exposed to a bunch of that stuff, and he's exposed his son to it. But I mean, these are really deep thoughts for a 20-year-old. And then Moraine, Moraine, Aes Sedai. Okay, sure. Like I get why they would talk about it, but I just thought it was a little odd for someone with this far removed from society. To be thinking super deep thoughts.
It seemed to be their religion. Like if you had somebody who came to the earth without knowing any of us and saw us saying Amen or saying the Hail Mary twice a day, you would think that was odd, but it seemed to be their religion. That was my take.
That's fair because, Marin, Alvir, Egwene's mom, mentioned it when she stood up on the table before the beginning of the festival. Hey, Beltane is happening, and we're trying to get all of our friends and families' lost souls back to be rebirthed by the wheel. And I'm just like, oh, we just keep saying it. But again, this is also I have a lot of background in it, so it was just to me it just seemed a little bit over the top with mentioning it. But that's just me. I've thought about having a tutorial session in this with some of the words that they've used very specifically Tavarin, which was a big concept in the book. I'm hoping they will get to it later because she just mentioned it in the first five minutes.
Down. Yeah.
And then never came back to it at all. Yeah. Right. So it's
I mean obviously it's the four kids but yeah. I don't know what it means. Yeah,
right. And we I've considered tossing some of those in, but maybe once we get into
we'll have a vocabulary session each week.
Exactly. Oh, what were the new words that we heard? This is like Great British Bake Off. We're like, oh hey, yeah. what does ta mean? Right. Thanks, okay, got it. I imagine they will get into it in the future. I liked the fact that they just tossed some words out and some phrases like Beltane, and then they let you get it from context clues and didn't necessarily just beat you over the head with it.
Right.
But that's all the notes I have. Anybody else have anything else?
I'm good.
No, I did find one of the things that I had mentioned, though, that is a reference to how this could potentially be part of our world just in the future. Mm-hmm. There is a line, tell us about Len, Egwene called, how he flew to the moon in the belly of an eagle made of fire. Oh. And there are some people that have kind of translated that eagle could be the eagle has landed. And Len could be a merger of LEM, which is the lunar module, and Glenn for John Glenn.
Hmm.
So, and there are a number of other references in here to Mosk the Giant with his lance of fire that could reach around the world, which is a reference in one of the books, could be Moscow and the ICBMs.
Oh, yeah. No, lance of fire. Yeah, that's interesting.
So apparently there are a number of these references throughout the books that could foretell that this is actually a distant future of our own time on Earth.
That is super interesting, especially if magic, we finally figure out how to use magic. That'd be
and
cool.
And girls are in charge.
It's like the opposite of Handmaid's Tale. It's basically... All right. We'll take a break. There's more to come. Stay with us. All right, welcome back. Moving into our news section, news about the Wheel of Time. Interview with Polygon.com, the showrunner Rafe Judkins. There were a couple of kind of neat answers here. So about like why he aged up the main characters. So in the books, they're all around 17 or 18, and we really, really felt that it was important to make them feel like they were 2021. And to do that and make it feel authentic, we also had to have those characters have a further emotional life than they've been leading. We felt like it was important to try to find a way to put some of these more adult concepts and relationships into their lives. So when the show starts, it doesn't feel like Moraine Into the Two Rivers is the first day of everyone's life. It should feel, hopefully, like they've all led complex emotional lives, and now they're being swept off on this whole journey together. Robert Jordan was at the time one of the few mainstream male authors to focus so heavily on women in his epic fantasy, but what was forward-thinking 30 years ago now reads as a frustrating commitment to the binary. And Judkins says, this is a world of balance and a world of yin and yang and the strength you've always had, you always have to have. In the first episodes, you already see some of the stuff we've done with gender. As the show continues on, we're always trying to keep that conversation alive and make sure that we're doing the same thing that he was trying to do in the 90s, but doing it today.
He continues on to say about delivering a quality product from beloved source material. I feel a special burden laying me down, crushing me, of just wanting to deliver for this thing that I love and my mom loves and so many of the women in my family love. I just want so much for the show to deliver for the people who really love it, the thing that they love, while at the same time truly creating something that can translate to television. It's built as a book series. I have to build this as a TV show. I hope that the changes that I've made and the changes we've had to make to do that still give the heart of it that people can fall in love with. Yeah, I think that's hard. And I think sometimes it's hard for book lovers. I know, I think you and I talked about this, Greg, when I first started reading Handmaid's Tale, which was this beloved book that I read in my formative years. It was hard, but you have to try to let go of that. And I say that as someone who has not read the books.
Right.
So no. It's certainly easy for me.
I mean, I'm not just impressed, but I am really glad that they got somebody that this is special to. And mm-hmm. that he doesn't want, he's not, you know, cashing a paycheck. He's trying to create something not only for consumers, but for him and his family who this, you know, this connected him and his mom. Oh, that was really cool.
Yep.
Yeah, and he wants to try and find a way to do it that everybody can share that same love that he has for the subject material at the same time.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Following up with another interview, Marcus Rutherford, who plays Perrin, and Joshua Sadowski, who plays Rand. Joshua? I think I said Josh, it's Joshua. Speaking with BloodyCool.com, they were asked, how familiar are you with the original story heading into filming? Joshua replied, "For me, when I got the audition, it was my intro to The Wheel of Time. When I got the part, I just started reading those books and then getting into the script." And Marcus replied, "I hadn't heard of the books. Then I got the part and I realized how big that kind of community was and how many copies it sold, and straight away read The Eyes of the World and The Great Hunt to have prep ready for season
one. That's a lot to prep for season one.
Yeah.
Well, Great Hunt is the second book.
Yes.
Right? That's, yeah. So yeah, he had to read the first two books. They were then asked, "Do you prefer going into a role cold without knowing much prior knowledge, knowing there's a vast history behind it?" Marcus replied, "I think it's good because we have the scripts, which were really rich and kind of gave you a real essence of the characters from the start. I think having both the scripts and the books to go between as an actor provided you with a lot of material to hit the ground running of the story." And Joshua replied, "I guess we had 1 month from hearing when I got the part to actually shooting." Yeah, you have to do both those books in a month? Jesus. "I think it was a month and we got the scripts. I at least tried to read as much as I possibly could. Then there was also the horse riding, the stunts, the archery, and the dialect to get down. So for 1 month, it was quite a lot."
I can't.
That's.
Yeah, I can't imagine trying to. That, oh, hey, if you've never ridden a horse before, hey, figure out how to look comfortable on a horse. Oh, that's crazy.
The horse riding, the stunts, the archery, the dialect, that alone is a lot to take on in a month. But combine that with reading the book as well. Man, like, when do you have the free time?
Yeah, I guess you don't. And I don't know what their chunk of money of Jeff Bezos's money there is. But hopefully it was they were compensated well for it, because that's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's all for news this week. We did actually get word that that they are filming season two right now, and anticipating that mid to late 2022.
That's
apparently
so cool.
The first two seasons were greenlit. When they bought it, or when Amazon bought the rights and greenlit it, not even 6 months later. They authorized season two, which makes me wonder if they are going to continue to, you know, dump money into it, or if they're going to see how the first season. Because I'll be honest, I'll be super disappointed if they ended after two seasons. But I really hope that it picks up. Not it picks up, but that it gets picked up, and they keep going.
Me too.
I feel like they're kind of. I want to feel like they're committed at this point. I'm hoping that there's already plans beyond season two.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens. But I'm really looking. Oh, man, I'm so excited.
Yeah, me too. Like I said, I already started pricing the Kindle books, so I'm probably going to be gone. I'm not going to read the first two books in a month, but you know, I'll try as hard as I can to push through them again.
All right, so now moving on to listener feedback. All right, so listener responses. Ben, you want to take the first one?
Sure. Our first one comes from Shay Wide. I apologize if that's not how your last name is pronounced. Overall, I'm liking the series. It took me a little bit to connect with the characters. I've read these books such a long time ago that these characters were ingrained in my mind. Slow start, but loved the action at the end. I think Trollocs were well represented, and the twist with Perrin in the fight was shocking. I'm forgiving a lot of the differences with the books, particularly the more mature relationships. My son, who has not read the books, watched it with me and loves it, so that colored my view as well. Looking forward to where this series goes.
That's awesome that you're able to share that with your son. He's enjoying it as well. That's sweet.
Well, I think, Wendy, didn't you say you had a similar experience? You had a number of people in your family also watch the series with you?
Yeah, my dad and my husband watched it, and they both liked it a lot. Yep. Yeah. All, you know, no, none of us have read the book, so. Renee Murray says, "I'm definitely watching this."
We will.
With lots of hearts.
Look forward to... Look forward to hearing from you, Renee, if you get an opportunity.
Renee is so great.
Yeah,
she's always giving feedback for Handmaid's Tale and Walking Dead cast. Renee, I think you said you're going to Fandemic in Atlanta in March. If you are there, I am buying you a drink, girl.
Yeah, it'd be awesome to meet you. I also am going to Fandemic, so that'll be.
I'm going to Fandemic because Jason and I are going to be migrating there.
Yeah,
I know, right?
Ben's going to be a little bit busy, but you know.
Yeah,
I'm going to be very busy that weekend, but I'll make time. It's all right.
And Megan Dively Lemon says, "Hey, that ghoul looks like Voldemort." I don't think that anyone is going to see that. Anybody who's ever seen Harry Potter is going to be able to look at the fade and say anything but, "Why is this a crossover series? What's going on?"
I mean,
I thought you guys were really talking about Lord of the Rings until just now. So,
wait, are you serious?
100%. Yes.
Oh my gosh!
Yes. don't tell my daughters.
That's awesome.
But I mean, seriously though, was there anybody there at part of production who saw the design of the fade and nobody said that this looks like Voldemort? I mean, there are going to be parts of the design that are going to change, but in the first episode, it looks like Voldemort. Like, there's no doubt in my mind.
I thought it looked like something exactly from like Hellraiser. Voldemort.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so does Voldemort. I mean,
okay.
in all honesty. Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yes, so we will learn more about Voldemort, hopefully next episode. all right, that's our show. Thanks for listening, everyone. If you'd like to write in or record a message and send it in, you can email it to talk@podcastica.com.
Check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/podcastica.
And you can also contact us on Twitter at Podcastica.
And at Podcastica, Strange Indeed is in the middle of Lock and Key. Jason, Rima, and Paik are covering that, and Great British Bake Off, which is almost done.
Your feedback Dexter. On oh the Great God. British Bake Off was the most hilarious thing, Greg.
Oh
I loved
God.
It.
I was so I disappointed. I was so disappointed.
I know.
But
I'm like three seasons behind. Oh, wait. I need to get caught up.
Greg gave the best feedback.
It was like I was like, oh my God, I have to send something in, even though they don't ask for that. And then on Walking Dead cast right now, in the finishing up, close to finishing up World Beyond and kind of looking at Fear of the Walking Dead, hate watching or reviewing or whatever. What else is going
well,
on?
Well, don't forget, too, that Strange Indeed is also covering
oh,
Dexter
right.
and Bloodshed
yeah.
as well. Yeah.
That's right.
Which has been great so
yeah.
far. Both the show and their coverage
yeah.
still,
oh.
has been
I
great.
I still haven't finished yeah. like season 3 of Dexter, and I don't want to watch the new one without without knowing where it ended before.
Well, so you have a ways to go.
Yeah, I got like 6 more seasons.
yeah.
To,
yeah.
What else is going on in Podcastica? Is there another one?
I don't know what's going on a podcast,
oh, House
but Podcastica. I know about it. Yeah.
Yeah, obviously we're covering this. And then upcoming will be Cobra Kai and Book of Boba
at the end of,
yep,
the, year.
End of the year. And then Book of Boba Fett, I think like the last couple weeks of December?
I think so, yeah. I think there's going to be a slight crossover. Not crossover, but multiple episode weeks of House Podcastica towards the end of December.
Yeah.
Because I think right when we're wrapping up with this, I think the following week is when they're jumping into Cobra Kai.
Oh, yeah. Cobra Kai, I'm so looking forward to that.
Me too.
The way that third season
oh,
ended.
Yeah.
I'm so stoked for season mm-hmm. 4.
Super excited.
And I was just telling Jason on Wilhelm too, because we were promoting it on Wilhelm, that I predict lots more Terry Silver impressions from Jason this season, considering Terry Silver is actually going to be in the show this season. Of course.
So I never watched Karate Kid 3, so it's 3, right, that Terry Silver's in?
Yes.
Or if I did, I don't remember it. So I only have the comedic impressions of from during Cobra Kai from Jason and Rich and... is it Jason or Rich?
I don't think I've seen Karate Kid 3 either.
Is it Rich or Eric? I think it's
maybe
Eric.
Because yeah,
I mentioned him, Eric, and Rima when we were talking about it before, and he didn't correct
okay,
me.
Then maybe it was Eric. Yeah,
so I think it's Eric.
Yeah, all of the crazy, the over-the-top, yeah, what's going on? That's what I'm loving.
I like that.
yeah.
If it's not Eric and it's Rich, I apologize. Yeah. But I think it's Eric.
All right. I think that's it. And then, so next time on this podcast, The Wheel of Time, Season 1, Episode 2, Shadows Waiting. All right, that's our show.
Thanks for listening.
Let the dragon ride again on the winds of time.
Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax Live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.